Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 28, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And it really is September 28th today.
It is. Trust me, I know. Every second on the clock that ticks, I get my heart a little more fluttery because I've got less than 24 hours to get packed for my next trip. And I just got home from my last trip last night, so.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that trip too much because some bad things happened on that trip for you. We don't want to talk about.
But no, I had a great time in Seattle. Look forward to telling everyone about it here in a couple weeks. You know, we got our super fan show coming up next week, and then that'll fill you in on all the great poker up in Seattle
right.
The week after that. But didn't get to play at all, unfortunately. But I did play craps. You know, we the wife and I finished dinner late one night, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I have the. I'm kind of tired. I don't know if I have the mental capacity needed to play poker tonight. But they had craps that was $3 with 10 times odds, and I'm like, you know, hey, let's play this. And then, you know, the wife always likes we can play something together, so I taught her craps. I don't know if she actually really she said afterwards she still had no idea what was going on. Well, we ended up taking quite a bit of money off that table, so
that's
ended up being
good.
A great decision. So actually I was a winning player again, of course, because I didn't play poker.
Well, that's because you just like to give back to the poker community so much.
That is true. I like to rob from the table games and give to the poker table.
Scott Long, the poker philanthropist. The Robin Hood of poker.
Well, before I left, obviously, you know, we did that great show on the Litterer Files last week, and the last two parts ended up being a 7-part series were released right after we finished recording, almost.
Yeah.
So we had a chance to catch up, and I found them just as fascinating as the first five. I don't know what you thought.
Oh, absolutely. And you could feel the sort of tension building and the climax coming. You know, you knew it was all building toward this one part. We were waiting for him to apologize, and that's exactly what happened. You know, he apologizes. It's literally the last thing that they say was his apology, and you could just feel it coming. But yeah, I think it was all very similar to the other parts. And I appreciated, you know, the effort that Parvis set in to put up, even though there were obviously some things that, you know, we probably would have done a little differently or more questions we would have asked. And we could literally fill a show with the follow-up questions that we felt like probably could have happened.
Sure.
But again, the pressure he was under, you know, and even Poker News themselves, it was tremendous, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know you mentioned that you thought it would be anticlimactic if he started the interview with this heartfelt apology. And I don't necessarily disagree, but I wonder whether that probably would have been a better strategy for him. And maybe he did, maybe he got, you know, cut out, maybe they edited it to be dramatic. I don't know. But maybe I think that would have put some folks' mind at ease if the very first thing they heard out of him is, hey, before you get started, I just want to say this was absolutely a terrible problem. I was a member of the board. It happened under my watch. Exactly what he did at the end.
Yeah.
He did it at the beginning and then got back to it at the end. I mean, from a PR standpoint, you know, for your public relations executive, I think that's exactly what you would have said. You know, start with the apology, end with the apology, and that's people are going to remember the first thing they heard and the last thing they heard. And they might, I'm not going to say they forget what's in between, but they're going to focus on those two things. And I don't know. I think from my point of view, I think you might have been better off to do that apology.
So it's kind of like when you're the boss and you sit down your employee and you give them the old sandwich.
Yep.
Where you give him the good thing up front, stuff to work on in the middle, and the good thing at the end. So he probably should have apologized up front, told everybody what he had to say, and then apologize one last time at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
That way, if you apologize up front, they'll listen to what he has to say in the middle, and then when he apologizes at the end, that's what they remember, that he's contrite. Very interesting. I never thought about it that way. I guess, you know, traditional interviews, you don't think about it. And I'm sure that that interview or that apology had to have come at the end, because when the interview started, it was light out, and you could see the Venetian sign, and the sun was still out. Yeah. And then it was dark and whatever at the end. So, but yeah, that's an interesting point. I really hadn't thought about that. You know, from a PR standpoint, I don't think about things. I always think about them as a journalist. So,
yeah.
You ask them usually chronologically. Yeah.
Yeah. Storytelling point of view, it was perfect, I think. But, you know, as we've seen, I mean, we've got, you know, two very good threads going on the forum right now at antiummagazine.com/forum. And I think, I don't think necessarily that those people would have been swayed had he apologized right up front, but it certainly couldn't have hurt.
Yeah, no, it couldn't. It definitely wouldn't have hurt.
This stuff about these loans being repaid.
Yeah, that stuff is crazy.
Fascinating to me. And there obviously there's quite a bit debate about of this as well, too. And obviously this is coming from Howard himself. But if folks haven't watched the last two clips, please go do that. I think you'll be fascinated by what he said. But, you know, essentially they had members that were given loans, and then when they said, hey, we need that money back to keep the company running, they said, you know what, I'm not going to give it back to you. And then this thing with Eric Lindgren, when he asked for a loan, and he ended up being double credited, which is absolutely, as Howard said, a travesty from the business standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, how you give him $2 million once and you give him $2 million again. But it says that Eric never repaid it. And then on top of that, we have him saying that Chris Ferguson did give $5 million back of his last distribution, and then told the company to keep the $9 million more it owed him at that point to help keep the company afloat. So, again, obviously all from Howard's point of view and open right to debate and further dissection. But I do think, if true, it paints a picture of that there are some other people involved that made this process far more difficult than it needed to be. And there's some people that I think people are ready to burn at the stake that probably maybe not did as much as people wanted them to do to keep get the problem fixed, but at least did much more than other people.
What I find fascinating is when Howard mentions and basically defends Chris Ferguson almost to a fault about how Chris didn't want to take any money from the company at all. Like, at all.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, his best friend who's running the company, or close friend, Batar, you know, this is the guy he put in place, but, you know, he put him in place. So Ferguson, I'm sure, has Batar's ear and can tell him whatever he wants, and Batar would do whatever Ferguson told him to do. How does Ferguson go from, I don't want us to have any money coming out of this company, to loaning people money from the company funds?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, okay, we're poker players, and that's what poker players do, but FTP is not a poker player. It's a company with millions and millions and near $1 billion.
Exactly.
You know, how does he go from, hey, we shouldn't take a dime, we'll hurt the company if we take any money, to, yeah, let's give Lindgren $2 million, and then, of course, there's another fault right there, and shows you how the company is run, that they can't even get a simple transaction clearly stated to someone who needs to be the person who is transferring the money. One puts it in his bank account, and the other one puts it in his full Tilt account. I mean, or whatever it was. That's just crazy.
Well, just I think terrible. Again, I mean, it's all supposition at this point. But
right.
But I think what we're seeing is kind of that poker players running a company and not being skilled at running a company and running it like they run their poker playing business. And I think most of us, you know, if our friend wanted a $2 million loan, even if we could afford it, we'd be like, you know, all right, let's get some paperwork. You know, hey, I know that's the best friend, best man at your wedding, but we're talking about some serious money here. Let's make sure it's clear. And that just doesn't happen in the poker world. I mean, people just give money left and right, and they know they're good for it, and if they end up not being good for it, then it starts getting out in the poker community, and it's almost like a self-policing kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're right, you can't do that at a company. I think that's where they... One of the things I think, where if you had a professional management team that would say, hey, whoa, this doesn't fly in the business world, you know, if you need a loan, And you know, obviously Howard had a huge loan from the company, and that's mind-boggling to me that you know someone who had gotten so much distribution from the company already still needed a loan. I don't know how that happens. I can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
So I mean, certainly a lot of people to blame for that.
One of the things that I would have asked is, are these loans only to your account? And you're playing high stakes on the account, or is this straight cash and you're putting in your bank account at home using, you know what I mean? Because I know Lederer came in and paid the money out of his pocket, but was he paying to pay back his account money that was loaned onto his account that got lost within the poker community to Full Tilt somehow, players and stuff? Or was it actual money? You know, I wonder about that too, because, you know, if you got a distribution of $25 million or whatever it is and you put down your bank account, but then you can't put $25 million online if you want to play online. You can only, you know, I mean, how much can you put online? Can you put that much on? I don't know.
Yeah.
So it'd be a lot easier for the company to just type in $700,000 into his account than to go through the process of the paperwork. You know, so I that was one of the things I would like to have known, which leads us to Parvis. You know, I guess he wrote about the interview and responded to some of the criticism.
Yeah, and I thought it was a real honest retelling of it from his point of view, that, you know, recognizing that, one, trying to reassure folks that were critical of some of the questions that he asked or didn't ask, that this was a very difficult situation, but at the same time admitting, hey, you know, I hear what you're saying, and you're right, there are some questions that I should have followed up with, and most specifically, the, you know, why the board didn't repay the distributions to make players whole. I mean, that's a question that I think everybody is asking, and, you know, obviously he opined on what he thought the answer would be, and I agree with him, but doesn't, you know, mean that you shouldn't ask it. But again, we talked about this last week. I mean, the pressure cooker he was under, for 7 hours to ask these questions, the short time frame to prepare for him, and obviously Howard was, I don't want to say long-winded, I mean, I think he was trying to be complete as much as he could be in his answers, made it tough to follow up. I mean, there's a couple times when I was watching, I ended up with three or four follow-up questions before Howard finished his thing.
Yeah.
And it's tough, I think, as an interview to go back and remember all those, even if you write them down, because the next answer changes the flow of the interview, you know? Yeah. So it's tough. So, you know, I give him mad props for being that honest with folks. And, you know, I hope folks are not too upset with him for what he didn't ask. And it looks like that Lederer is making the rounds now. He was on the 2+2 podcast, it sounds like, this past week. I imagine he's going to be doing more interviews, and you know, so I think there's going to be more opportunity to get those questions answered.
The other thing too, when it comes to like Parvis and people were saying, you know, maybe they should have had someone from 60 Minutes doing these types of, but I think that there were questions that Parvis asked that 60 Minutes couldn't have asked or wouldn't have known to ask. So I think you're getting a lot from Parvis that you would not have gotten from. Yeah, so maybe you would have gotten the hard-nosed, hey, why didn't you give up your distributions and pay back? But on the other side of the coin, there are a lot of insider knowledge that, you know, unless you sat there and prepped the 60 Minutes guy for weeks, you know, I don't think you would have gotten the same kind of interview. So there are six of one, half dozen of the other there. I think you got what you would get from Parvis and maybe not necessarily from the 60 Minutes guy. So, and I guess he said that he wished he had asked him, what do you think of Ray Bittard now? But I think that's the same thing as the distributions question. I think he would have known what the answer would have been. He was leading up throughout the entire interview of how he was upset with the way the guy was doing things.
Well, that was my question that I wish he would have asked. You know, I just...
I'm sorry, what did I say? Parvis would have asked it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, yeah, you. But don't you think that's the answer?
It probably is, but I would want to see the question just to see the reaction. I mean, obviously, you know, as we talked about last week, I don't think Howard directly pinned all this on Ray, but his answers, he painted a tapestry where you could easily connect the dots to that. He's like, you know, hey, Ray was behind this, and we just didn't have enough oversight for him, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
But, you know... There are folks out there that don't think there's any remorse at all coming from Howard, and that's fine. That's a personal decision. I personally disagree. I do see remorse coming from him in this interview. And, you know, I guess I would want an opportunity for him to maybe this is going to come down the road. I mean, this time I think this interview was important for him to apologize and fully explain what happened, and maybe later he's going to be more comfortable saying, hey, we left a guy in charge that should not have been in charge, and that doesn't excuse our culpability as a board of managing him, but I really do feel upset that we had somebody to put me in this position where I'm hated now by the poker community for maybe not what people were hating me for. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I just would have liked to have seen that reaction. And like I said, maybe it's going to come later on. So.
Yeah, I think that 6 months from now, we're still going to be getting the remnants of interviews, from people who were involved, even as it goes further down the line of the owners and the partners or whatever you want to call them, members. So this is hardly over, and it's going to take a long time to get everybody's opinions out and then filter through all that and then come up with a synopsis of what we think actually happened. But it was riveting stuff. I mean, it's funny, when it first happened, when they were announcing them, I was like, I'll get to it. But then once I watched one, I was like, all right, I got to watch all of them now.
Yeah, I mean, I was like refreshing during the day, waiting for the next one to be.
Yeah.
To pop up, and just because it's the behind the scenes story, and that's what I personally want, and is to know what happened. The legal system's taking care of who's to blame. I just want to know what happened.
Yeah,
and I think this was a good look into that question.
Definitely a good start to kick it off. I mean, that's ultimately, he's the guy that everyone wanted to hear from first anyway, other than maybe Ray, which they're not going to. But and then Ferguson, I think, is up next. He's going to have to talk now, because I want to hear his reactions to not only what Letter was saying, but give his own account and reaction to his friend, who is basically the one who did all this to everybody. And then, I would like to hear what Ferguson has to say.
Absolutely.
Okay, our hotline, 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it. If we hadn't used it before, we'll give you something pretty cool. This is Don from St. Louis.
Hi, guys. This is Don in St. Louis, and I had a comment on the bill that would penalize online poker companies that took illegal bets or were active during the unlawful time. I think that PokerStars is in a good position to be allowed in because the government has already made arrangements with them. They made a deal to buy Full Tilt, and they wouldn't enter into an agreement with an unlawful entity. So I think that's going to count in their favor toward being allowed in sooner.
It's on, Louis. Very nice, very nice.
Thank you.
I think there might have been I think he might have misunderstood us.
Yeah, maybe.
Obviously, by the terms of the agreement with the Department of Justice, PokerStars is permitted to come back into the country if it's able to get a license. There certainly wasn't a T in the settlement that they were going to be licensed. All the guarantee said was that we will not block you from coming back in. I think what we were trying to convey on last week's show was that, one, there's this five-year blackout, so mm-hmm. that's they're not going to be able to come in within that 5 years, whatever happens. And then after that, obviously, they need to get licensed, and that 5 years is going to be pretty punitive, right?
Sure, absolutely. That's a long time. They might even be in business in 5 years. You don't know. You know what I mean? That's a long time.
Well, yeah, I think this domestic market is going to be shaping up like no one can predict mm-hmm. right now. I mean, if you look at the summary text that we've already read about the bill, and there's a lot in there not for us to like, but it's certainly set up to let people catch up with this 15-month period and then really...
give them time to sink or swim.
Well, yeah, 5 years and, but then after that, but really to give... U.S. gaming companies leg up in servicing this market. I mean, there's no way around that. And, you know, 5 years of developing, I mean, we think back to Full Tilt. I mean, they were only in business for, what, 8 total? And the first couple of years were kind of floundering. So, and look at how big they became before all this happened in 5 years. Right now, we all love PokerStars. I miss it so much.
Yeah.
I say it every week. But eventually, after 5 years and not being able to play and having all this other competition in these other places to play, you know, we have short-term memory, I think, as Americans particularly. And, you know, it's going to be tough for them to come right back in after that 5 years and just take over the market like they did before. That's what I was trying to get at, I guess.
Is there, you know, correct me if I'm crazy on this, but is there a way for Poker Stars to create another company that would team up with, say, the Wynn again to get back into the country quicker? Not be Poker Stars, but let it be known that the same software and the same everything is being used. You know what I mean? Is there a way around that?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think there could be any same ownership or anything, but certainly they could, to your point, probably license the software and the whatever else to another company that could then take it. I mean, I suppose it's possible. I mean, I guess what the PPA is concerned about is that, you know, all right, fine, there's a penalty here, but we've already made them pay the penalty, you know, with the fines and everything that they did.
Hmm.
You know, here's a company that players have a tremendous amount of respect for and trust, which is really tough to find right now in the online poker market, right?
Yep, yep.
And by not letting them even partner with a U.S. gaming company, you're, in the essence, harming poker players, because this is a name and brand that they trust.
Right.
And, you know, maybe don't let Poker Stars just come in and just run their own site, but at least let them, you know, partner with a Wynn or Caesars or somebody like that, and be the behind the scenes folks of getting that going, and then you get some built in trust and credibility.
That's a good point.
All right, Don, we appreciate you calling the hotline. That's 813-448-1120. We've swagged you recently, but everybody else call that number, and we'll send you something great like a deck of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up. You can buy your own decks at the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com.
I love how you just made swag a verb. That was awesome. I'm going to contact Webster, I think. And, hey,
I've been reading this tremendous book, you know, full of description and adjectives. So it just encouraged me to, you know, expand my vocabulary, particularly, you know, when I'm talking about sex scenes.
It's overly descriptive, I would think, this book you're getting secondhand knowledge of. All right, our mailbag comes from Graham Clark. He's from Toronto. YYZ, baby! That's over your head, Scott. Sorry. All right, so he says, I have a lot of difficulty understanding the economics of tournament poker. Take a look at a recent $340 event at the Venetian. This tournament also has a $10 staff add-on, which most serious people would take for the 20% increase in chips. So out of the $350, 10 goes to the staff and 40 goes to the casino. Of the remaining 300, 3% goes to the staff and 0.5% goes to the jackpot. That leaves $289.50 to go to the prize pool. 17% of the full buy-in disappears right away. Seems like minus EV compared to a cash game. Now imagine I win. Not that there is any risk of that, he says. The tournament that I am thinking of had a first-place prize of 24%, $20,000. I'll never see that. I will walk away from the cage with $14,000, with the remaining 30% held back for taxes. If 30% is held back from each player, only 58% is returned to the players after all of the taxes, fees, and add-ons are taken out. How does this make sense? If I play a cash game, I'll never pay any rake near to the amount charged in a tournament, and I can walk away from the cage with everything that I cash out with, leaving me to deal with my tax situation on my own, which is 0% since I'm a recreational player from Canada. Now to my real question. If I were to actually win a tournament, there is an exception that expectation that I will tip the staff out of my winnings, which have already been depleted by over 40%, including 3%, plus the $10 add-on that's already gone to the staff. What is the fair range to tip the staff? I assume that only a Deutsche Bank would get out of there without paying additional tips, or am I wrong?
Oh, I think this is a great question.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I like that he broke it all down like that. It's pretty cool.
Very, very thoughtful. I definitely like that. I guess he didn't have a real question, but I'm going to kind of quickly gloss over that, unless you wouldn't dwell on it.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, there is probably an expectation from the staff that there will be an additional tip. Obviously, when there's a dealer add-on and money's coming out of the prize pool, which personally I don't like, you know, do one or the other, but, you know, a lot of tournaments do that. What you tip after that is much, much smaller than you would if there's only one of those things happening or none of those things happening. You know, I don't really want to hazard a guess on the range, but it's fairly minuscule, but it's something, I guess. I wouldn't be too hung up on that, personally.
The other thing, too, is most of the time when I play in tournaments in cash, it's usually a tournament that doesn't do those procedures. Or, yeah, there's an add-on, so I'll pay that. But then a $5 tip is not a lot coming from me, or a $10 tip, you know, if I were to win a decent amount of money. So, but when you're also taking it out of the money that I've given them for my prize pool, then it's tougher to gauge how much to tip. I really don't know, and I think we always try to steer clear of this because you certainly don't want to offend staffs and dealers, and I don't want to make that decision for someone else. If somebody felt like they got great service and they're happy to have won $14,000 for a $350 buy-in, then yeah, you say, you know what, here's $140 or, you know, whatever, $1,000, I don't know. But to me, I always, and we mention this on the show all the time, but since the tipping keeps coming up, we have to keep giving this answer. I always go to the tournament director or the floor and say, can you tell me what's customary? Or what's usually good in this room for tipping?
Specifically on this, saying,
yeah.
I don't think there's any shame in being pointed in that question, saying, hey, all right, I want to be generous, but I've noticed that you've taken 3% out for staff. We also gave a dealer add-on for however many people that would be in there. How much more is really expected of me? And I would say, I would think from a dealer and a staff point of view, you know, from the people that I've talked to that run tournaments like this, the reason you have both included in there is to make sure the dealers make what they should. So anything on top of that is gravy. That's what I've actually been told by one. So I guess I would be a little disappointed if there are dealer staff out there that would look down on you for not getting more in this particular tournament. Obviously, they certainly would appreciate it, so that doesn't mean you shouldn't, but there obviously is quite a bit going to the staff here, right?
Yeah, and here's something to think about, too. People are quick to frown on players who, when it's a big tournament or something, when they don't think they've tipped enough or something. And then a couple of things to consider, you know, one, like, people are always looking for percentages. You know, he looked for a fair range, which isn't a percentage, but in a way it is. You're asking sort of for a percentage there.
Yeah.
How could you possibly give a blanket percentage? Okay, so let's say that someone wins the $8.5 million at Harrah's in end of this month or end of next month, whatever. And, yeah, okay, so let's give a percentage. All right, I think you should tip 10%. Okay, so you're telling me that this guy needs to tip $850,000? That's ridiculous. That's way, 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 way too much. I mean, you're going to give a tip of almost $1 million? You just can't do percentages. It's just, there's no way. You have to tip what you think is fair or whatever. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what that number is, but I know 10% as a blanket percentage. You know, that's just crazy to me. $1 million tip almost. And you have to take into consideration that the person's paying taxes on that money. You know what I mean? So here I'm going to give away, you know, almost 10% or 10% of my winnings and then pay 30% taxes. And now I'm paying 40% basically of tax. You know, it's almost like a 50-50. That's just crazy. So I don't think a percentage fits when people ask these questions. It has to be, you know, I mean, when we're going out to dinner and you're tipping the waiter or the waitress or server, whatever you want to call him, it's a different thing. It's totally different, you know, than this. This is not...
Well, I wouldn't say it's totally different.
But, well, the meal isn't $8.5 million.
That's true. But, I mean, there should be... there's no... The guy that serves me at a steakhouse is not necessarily doing any more work than the woman that's serving me at Denny's.
Right.
And so I've never understood the percentage in that, too. I mean, it should be, you know, what you think the service is worth. But, I mean, obviously there's a standard there. And that's the problem with players have is there's not really a standard. With poker, and everybody wants one, I wish we could give them one, but it's just not going to happen. And part of the problem you can't do it is because of this. I mean, some tournaments do a dealer add-on. Some tournaments take it out of the prize pool. Some tournaments do both. So, I mean, you'd have to have this rule book of several pages.
Yeah.
You know, a little slide rule of trying to figure it out, so you just don't. But, you know, what I'll say about the other thing, too, is, and I'm not trying to pick on Graham here, but we get questions like this all the time. Why would anybody play a tournament? Blah, 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 blah. Okay, now, when I win, how much do I tip? All right. It seems a little odd to me, right? If you're so upset with, and you determine that there's negative EV and they take too much out of it, no one's forcing you to play a tournament.
Right.
Just don't play cash, you're right. If you play cash, then, you know, you take care of the tax situation on your own, and that's up to you, and maybe you make more. So what I suspect is happening is people want to play tournaments, they just want it to be structured differently. And that's a different question. That's a going to letting the poker room managers, tournament directors, whoever it is, know, hey, I really want to play a tournament, but considering everything that comes out of here, it needs to be more reasonable for me. Now, that they may not care, or they may care. You know.
The other thing I wanted to mention about the early part of his question, two things. One, that's almost the reason why I don't play tournaments, Graham. I mean, it almost is. It's tough for me to rectify the amount of time I have to invest into these things to make the money. And here's a good thing to think about, too. Okay, so let's say he did win the tournament, and like he said, he walks away with 14 grand. All right. So you're supposed to, a good poker player cashes pretty much 10% of the time. Okay. So if you were to play, you know, 10 of these tournaments, okay, it would cost you $3,500, essentially, if you were to play 10 of these tournaments. And you're only going to cash one of those times. And if he makes 14 grand, then he made $11,000 profit. And it's like, that's only if he won when he cashed. You know?
True. Yeah.
So you would have to really make the top, probably in this event, probably the top 10 or top 7 to make your money back from just playing all 10 events. So it's such a difficult world. You really have to play the big buy-ins and win one pretty quickly. Or find a backer who's willing to just lose money, because it's tough to make money.
Or a tournament that has a big participation. And I think that's my answer to this is, long entering too many $340 tournaments. All right.
Yeah.
But so if I enter one and I win $20,000, like you said, and then you take away all the other crap that he's talking about, I mean $14,000, that is massive to me. You know, I will be on cloud nine for 5 years with that, and I'm not going to go and play 10 of these tournaments like you're mentioning. Now, it's completely different when you're talking about a pro or somebody that's grinding it out. But for someone like me who puts $200 on the cash game table at a time to take a shot at put $340 in and win $20,000, I'm never going to win $20,000 playing 1-2 no limit.
Right.
Never going to do it. It's never going to happen. So, I mean, that's kind of the answer. That's why you do it. Now, I mean, obviously, if you're making it on a purely financial raking or thing, then there is no reason to play it. But the reason to play it is for that big score. I mean, it's the same reason people will play a slot machine versus craps or blackjack.
Right.
It's not financially the right thing to do, but you want that big score, and when you get that big score, then that changes everything.
That's the thing. It's just percentage wise. If you are a tournament player, and that's, you know, because for you and me, we are on the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to buy-ins. We don't buy into bigger tournaments. But there are a lot of people out there who think, $350, that's nothing. That's,
oh, yeah, absolutely. You know,
so they wouldn't think twice about playing 10 of these and cashing in one of them, and then you'd have to win it to really make any kind of profit, and you've only made $8,000 profit or whatever it is if you consider that you play all 10 and didn't cash in 9 of them. So it's really a tough grind. I don't know how guys do it. I really don't. I don't know how people, unless they're making a lot on the side in cash or they got a real generous benefactor or something. It is a difficult life, and I don't know how they do it. I really don't. And more props to them, to those who are succeeding at it.
Yeah, well, I know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, when you do all this math about the tournaments, I mean, you really should take it the final step that Mike Caro does, you know. You know, what Mike Caro says, the reason he doesn't like tournaments is because the winner gets all the chips, but only gets 20% of the money.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Yep.
And that's from a mathematical standpoint, that's a compelling argument. All right. But if every tournament was winner take all, no one would play tournaments. So, you know, you just have to go into tournaments understanding that it's not, from a mathematical standpoint, as good as cash games, but there's other reasons that you might want to play it.
Yep.
And if those other reasons are not good enough for you, that's perfectly fine.
Yep.
But they are good enough for scores of other people. So,
very cool.
All right, Graham, I appreciate the letter, obviously, and we are going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Mapsoft. Folks don't have to win. Be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
All right, call the floor this week comes from DK.
DK.
Says that we were in the middle of a small home game tournament. Oh, I love when we have home games. Jody gets a rule on home games. This is awesome. This is stuff that won't happen at casino, but he's got some.
Maybe not.
He's got the players at heart. So he goes, small home game tournament when it was my turn to deal. I shuffle and deal. Players bet and call. I deal the flop. Players check and bet. And wait a minute. After two players have acted and two more players to act, we realize there's a fourth card hidden behind the flop. To my understanding, under normal circumstances, if you deal four cards to the flop, the fourth card coming from the deck would be the next burn card. This way, the holy order, I love that, of the deck is preserved, and the open burn card gives everybody the same information. But in my case, action has taken place and the hidden card belonged to the flop. What to do? I decided that the hidden card should be the next burn card because two players have acted. It was the fault of me and the slightly sticky cards, so these players should not be forced to play with a new board and risk giving away their hand. Did I make the right decision?
That's what Jody says. Bravo! You made the best decision for the game possible at that point. You might have the potential to run tournaments on a professional basis. Hey, I praise. One comment, there is no holy order of the cards, although some math-minded folks, a few others, will argue this point. As long as everyone has two random cards, there's no doubt someone could know what someone else's cards are, and there's no doubt no one could have known the board in advance. You have a playable hand. Better players want as many hands as possible, which means as few missed deals as possible, and heaven forbid, as few chop pots pre-showdown, preferably never, to fix problems as possible. In golf, you play the ball where it lies, not where it should be. What a concept.
Wow. Well, here's one thing. Never in my life have I ever been called math-minded.
No.
Wow, I am now a math-minded person. Move over, Gundam.
I'm happy that he gives such high praise to DK, and because it's tough in those home game tournaments.
Sure.
To know what to do if you haven't seen it done somewhere else and see someone rule on it, you know. The open thing is you just gotta make the best decision you possibly can, and I simply think it would have been a mistake to reshuffle the flop and put it out.
Yeah, no. Good move, and you know, hey, you got a little tournament director in you.
Absolutely. And we're going to be happy to send you a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home deal buttons with timers built right into them. Use them in the home game.
That's right.
You can also customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anti-Up logo version. And when you order, use code ANTIUP for free shipping.
We have an audio feedback this week. That just never happens. This is awesome. Brian from Chicago.
Hey guys, I just wanted to call to say thank you to Chris during otherwise a relatively heavy, serious topic of the letter files for the gut-busting, laugh-out-loud reference to Strange Brew during last week's podcast. So I really appreciate it. It was really funny. So keep up the good work. And you may want to explain to the other 95% of the Anti-Up who didn't get that reference why you were cackling and cawing. So otherwise they may think you need to be taken to the loony bin.
Oh, you poser, eh?
Bob and Doug McKenzie, baby! I was glad I made someone laugh.
Yeah, you know, the older we get, the more these references get older as well.
Yeah.
And eventually we become the old guys in the corner cackling about stuff that no one's ever heard of. I have no problem with that. That's where I'm going.
I have short arms. Ah, Brian, thanks for calling, man.
Exactly. I think just getting these old references just show that you've been around.
That's right.
That's a badge of honor, right? And it's not like the new kids can't watch Strange Brew. You know, they got Netflix and stuff now.
That's right. You can rent it. Yep. Probably even see it for free on one of those Crackle sites.
That's true. Yeah,
they're fully legitimate. No, nothing illegal about it, so you can go watch them on
Comedy Central, too. Although, of course, you never want to watch the edited version of these things. But.
Hey, our Superfan show was recorded this week. Pretty exciting stuff.
I heard it was a raucous time.
Yeah, I got the file. I'm ready to edit it. I'll probably do it over the weekend or early part of next week, and we'll post it. But had some super fans get together and pontificate on plenty of problems the poker world is facing. That's a lot of peas. And we're real excited. We're real appreciative of what they did, and we'll put that on the feed next week. So some good stuff coming up.
Looking forward to hearing it myself. And then, as we mentioned last week, Dover Downs and Tampa Bay Downs are now hosting inaugural Anti-Up Poker Leagues. At Dover, you can play in the 7 p.m. Wednesday night tournaments through December 12th for a chance to win an Anti-Up cruise package and a personalized champion's jacket from Anti-Up. And at Tampa Bay Downs, you can play, I believe it's 6 tournaments a week up until December 31st, and the top point earners will be invited to a free roll where there'll be a couple Anti-Up cruise packages and, of course, one of those champion's jackets. Go to antiupmagazine.com/leagues for more information on those.
Very cool. Also, we're looking for new ambassadors in Canada. Graham may want to step up to the plate here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you are interested in doing something for us, if we end up moving up into the Canada area, we'd have you apply at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. So get in there and send us your application.
And don't forget our Anti-Up Poker Cruises, 5 great cruises on tap this year. Next, Baltimore's coming up right around the corner. And then Port Canaveral, Miami, New York City, and Tampa in 2013. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at antiupcruises.com. We have our new promotional video there as well, too. And we have upcoming giveaways at Dover Downs Hotel Casino, Derby Lane in St. Petersburg, Florida, and Tampa Bay Downs.
Very cool. All right, let's see what's happening in the Anti-Up newsroom.
The Poker Players Alliance has issued a statement expressing concern for some parts of the online poker bill that Senators Harry Reid and John Kyle hope to push through Congress before the end of the year. Among the concerns are player penalties, the excessive blackout period, a lack of international liquidity, and a 5-year penalty for companies who previously served the U.S. market. Executive Director John Pappas says the PPA has made these concerns known to the bill's authors, but also understands that some of them won't be able to be addressed out of political expediency. Boy, hacked that word.
I know. I was waiting to see you try to pronounce whatever it was that you spelled on the file this week.
I actually pronounced it correctly. Didn't spell it. That's a rare thing there.
I think we knew about these concerns a little while ago, and they're all valid concerns. Luckily, that you know, usually these things take on all shapes and forms before they're actually signed, if they actually get through anyway, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So. But you know, it's also I think. Just a reminder to folks that we can't wait for the perfect bill. If we wait for the perfect bill, we'll never get a bill.
That's true.
So, you know, we need to make sure that we get the best bill possible, but that the best bill possible is almost never going to be the perfect bill.
Yeah, and that's what they're trying to do here. They're just trying to get the best thing for us while they still can. And, hey, if something gets pushed through that's strict, at least it's through, you know, and it's yeah. And it's legitimate and regulated and we can move forward. So, yeah, I agree with some of these concerns, and we'll see what happens. As promised, when it closed the deal to buy Full Tilt Poker, PokerStars has announced that the site will relaunch in several countries in November. It also announced how citizens of some of those countries may choose to receive the balances they had on Full Tilt when it shut down. Because of regulatory issues, those paybacks are being handled differently from country to country.
Yeah, quite a mess that they're trying to peel.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy.
Every country has different rules, and you know, to their credit, they're working through them and making sure everybody has the best possible options they can. But wow, what a nightmare! A lot of Advil being popped. All right, and finally, raise your hand if you saw this coming. My hand is way up high.
You took my line, buddy. You stole my line.
Boca Pro Beth Shack, famous for her 1,200 pair collection of designer shoes. Is starting her own shoe line. She has designed 25 models so far, each named after a woman, and they'll sell for $160 to $190 a pair.
I'll take an order of these Scott Long pumps.
Yeah, yeah. Scottina.
Scottina. You know, Beth Shack has gotten a lot of FaceTime on our show. We've never even talked to her or even know her.
Yeah, to be honest,
you got to get rid of the Beth Shack references on the show.
Oh, I know. The wife was watching me as I was putting this file together on the plane last night, and I Googled Beth Shack because I had to get to find the story. And I'm like, you know what? I really don't want to put her on the show again, but I just didn't have anything else to put there. I always like to have something a little fun at the end, and that's the best I could do. But the reason I want to put it on there is I wanted to say I don't think every pair of shoes I've bought in my entire life have added up to $190.
$190? All of the shoes combined have not added up to $190?
Right, I'm being a little facetious, but my point is...
Oh, okay.
I don't think I've ever spent more than $50 for a pair of shoes.
Mm. Well, it shows, too. I've seen your wardrobe.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But, I mean, shoes are functional. They don't need to be flashy.
It depends on who you are. But guys wear watches who have cell phones in their pockets with the time on them. They wear watches to be fashionable, not to keep time anymore.
Yeah, and I don't like that. I'm not.
It's so, a different society, buddy. You're an old man in the corner complaining about things.
Here's what's funny is if you do the math there, if all the shoes that she bought were $190, she would have spent $250,000 on shoes in her life. And we know her shoes cost way, way more than that because we had that big dispute over the divorce, but that's just, I don't know.
I was actually shocked that they were in that price range. I thought that was much more than affordable than what she...
Just ticked off that she's had to spend so much on shoes in the past. Now she's just trying to...
Yeah, maybe. I was actually happy that she only charged that much for her shoes. Not that I'm going to buy a pair, but, you know, I thought that was reasonable, actually, considering where she lives, too. I mean, she's in the New York area, so you can buy a sweater for, like, $8,000. So
she's becoming what's the word I'm looking for?
The Annie Up of the shoe world?
She's the Robin Hood now.
Another Robin Hood reference. Oh my God, is Kevin Costner on the show this week? Because I want to ask him why he played that role without an English accent. All right, we have a brand new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated at a nine-handed. $1, $2, no limit hold'em cash game. The table is fairly timid with a few tight aggressive players. We have 325 and are on the button. Under the gun calls. Under the gun plus 1 and plus 2 fold. The MPs 1 and 2 fold. The cutoff raises to $10 with 200 behind. And we look down at the king of clubs, queen of hearts. Good thing this player's on our right. He's tight aggressive, and we'd hate to play this pot out of position against him. We call, the blinds fold, and the under-the-gun calls. He's the big stack at the table, but isn't very good at all. He got lucky on back-to-back hands to grow a $100 buy-in up to almost 5 big bills. The pot is about $30, and the flop comes the queen of spades, 8 of diamonds, 3 of clubs. This seems like a pretty safe flop. The under-the-gun checks, and the cutoff bets $15 into the $30 pot. This precise half-pot bet seems like a continuation bet more than anything. We make the call, and the under-the-gun calls as well. The pot is now at around $75, and the turn is the 3 of hearts. This doesn't change much. Once again, the under-the-gun checks. But this time, so does the cutoff. Normally we'd fire here, but we want to exercise some pot control, so we check too. The river brings the 5 of clubs, another inconsequential card, and again, the under-the-gun checks. But this time, the cutoff makes it $35 to go. What do?
All right, we've teased you long enough, Anti-Up Nation. It's finally time for us to announce that the Anti-Up Poker Tour... we'll kick off this November at Thunder Valley Casino Resort near Sacramento, California, with as many as 11 more stops over the following 12 months.
Pretty exciting stuff. Of course, you know, if you're a true fan of Anti Up, you probably already know because you saw the magazine already or you saw the tweet or whatever. But, we've been waiting to let you guys know, and we're very excited. This is a big, big step for us.
Yeah, I mean, we've been spending a lot of time trying to get this off, see it take off with... you know, 5 stops coming up right already, right out of the gate is very humbling and very exciting. And really looking forward to filling out the rest of the schedule here. But, you know, we, you know, I'm on the road quite a bit. Chris is on the road with me a little bit less than that, but enough to talk to folks. And, you know, we just got so much feedback from players and managers, even before we even mentioned that we were thinking about doing our own tour.
Right.
About what they didn't like about what they did and didn't like, I guess I should say, about the other tours out there. And, you know, we took a little pencil and paper and wrote those all down and tried to put together something that I think both players and managers like. And I know certainly out of the gate, the managers were real excited about this. And I know the player enjoyment is going to come as soon as we kick this off.
It's very exciting stuff. And, you know, I when I see the fact that you and I were two schmoes sitting around a office that had a microwave behind us 7 years ago, and now we can literally make a huge footprint again in the poker world. You know, first a show, then the magazine, and now a tour. We just really are going to work very hard to make everyone happy and make this sort of a staple for players like us around the country and for poker rooms and poker room managers who think like us as well. And very exciting. And when you think about the properties that are on board already, it's very exciting. And I also think that we're bringing some attention to rooms that some people may not know about, but they should know about because they're awesome. So we're very excited about this.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, particularly our inaugural event is one of those resorts that I think people should know about that, but they may not know about it yet. And this is a perfect way of introducing it to them. But, you know, for players, you know, this is actually the thing that I think both players and managers are most excited about. If you win the main event at any of our tour stops, you will be featured on the cover of Antia Magazine.
Yes, very cool. Who else can promise that? Anyone? Anyone?
Well, you know what I like about it too is we've prided ourselves on trying to get amateurs or winners of tournaments that that may sometimes go beneath the radar on the cover, and I'm very proud that we've been able to do that. But what players didn't know is they just didn't know what tournament was going to be, and
we didn't know.
No, we didn't know either. So
we don't even know what's going to be on the cover this month.
No, of course we don't. yeah, we didn't talk about that right. But now, you know, players will know, you know, hey, if you have an ego, and if you're a poker player, you have to have an ego, you go play that main event, and in addition to winning all that great cash, and this personalized Antia Champions jacket we're going to give you as well, too, you're going to get on the cover. And, you know, it's been amazing to me, some of the folks that we put on the cover, how much they've, the gratitude that they've extended to us.
Yeah.
You know, hey, this is the best thing that's happened to me in my life. And that, I'm not making that up. That somebody actually said that to us.
Oh, sure. a few people have actually said that to us.
Yeah, so, you know, really is a good opportunity for folks to, you know, I don't want to say brag to the friends and family, but certainly, you know, get the recognition and of something that literally you can't buy.
Right. I mean, when you think about where we are right now in the lexicon of poker, we can't offer the same value of a bracelet, what that would mean to you, because we haven't built our brand yet. But what we can offer you, and what we think could be important and could be something you can take pride in, is the cover of a magazine. I mean, and not only just any old magazine, but a national magazine that is as big as any other magazine out there now. And I think that's something that people would want to play for now, just like a bracelet. How many covers do you have, you know? How many bracelets do you have? So we're hoping to maybe someday be on par with that if we can keep this ball and juggernaut running. So,
absolutely. And also, all events at the Antia Poker Tour stops will qualify for Antia's revamped Player of the Year points race. So that gives players of all bankrolls a great shot at moving up the leaderboard. You know, you don't have to just have $1,100 to play a main event. You can play some of these $100 lead-up events and get points, and if you play enough of them, you're going to be right there in the thick of it for players that just play the big events.
Yeah, I don't want that to be lost on anybody. Any event that you play that's an Antia Poker Tour series, you get points for Player of the Year. It's not just one event, you know, which is the way the World Series does theirs, too, I think. There's
circuit. Exactly, yeah.
So it's not groundbreaking, but it is for us because we've always made it just the main event. Well, now there's more reason to play our stops because there's more chances for you to be the Player of the Year. So, very exciting.
And, of course, for fans of Antia, either you or me or both of us will be on site for at least a part of each of these Antia Poker Tour events. So, you know, we've had fun doing meetups and stuff, but now we'll have them planned out pretty far in advance. So, come out and play one of these actual Antia Poker Tour tournaments, and sit down and play some cards with us, have a beer, have a milk, whatever it is you want to do, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and we'll try to get some of our ambassadors to be there, too, to help with some of the coverage or just helping out or just be part of the, you know, face of the NEUP. So very exciting stuff, and I keep saying exciting because it is. I mean, I just... It's remarkable to me.
You're positively
giddy. I am giddy. It's remarkable to me that we're doing this, and I hope that everyone comes out and appreciates it and, you know, play in a few events or just meet us, whatever you need to do to be there just to help, you know, make this a success. We'd appreciate it.
And for poker rooms, I think our tour answers their calls for a tournament series that doesn't dictate what events they run, what buy-ins they charge, how the structures are designed. They can name the event whatever they wish. And, you know, that all sounds great for the poker room manager, but I think players will benefit from it because these managers are going to be able to design an event that works for their area. You know, you can't just necessarily pick up a style of play and structure in Florida and drop it into California, or pick it up in California and drop it in Minnesota. And the fact that we're letting the managers make all the decisions, I think is going to attract a high number of local players, and really that's what players are looking for in tournaments now, is to know that there's going to be other people playing.
Yeah, I mean, who, in most instances, who knows better what will make their own players happy? Oh, poker room manager or just some guys coming in with a tournament? No, the poker room manager is going to know. So here's a good example of that. Let's say we walk into a poker room here in Tampa Bay area and say, hey, put Big O on the board. Yeah. No one's going to even know what that is or play in it. But if you do it at Pechanga in California, or it's going to get a list. You know, so they're each region has its own thing. You know, up northeast, you could probably get a stud game spread. Down here, not a chance. Yeah. So, yeah, these players and these managers know what they want, and why should we be the ones telling them what they should do? Let them host an event and do what they think's best for their players, and also make it attractive to other people to show up, because, one, they're going to have a chance to be on a cover. Two, they're going to have an exciting structure and a lot of things to do. Because as most of these places are just going to be fantastic places to be at, not just to play poker at. So very good stuff coming along the way from everything, from all angles, I think, doing it this way. And, you know, we're also offering the media with this, you know. Not a lot of poker tours. You win the tour, but what do you get for it? You still have to pay to market it. Well, now you're getting our tour. We can market it for you. So pretty good.
Yeah, that all adds up to hopefully really big fields, and that's what players really want. So at that point, you know, you can win the $20,000 first prize, even if you have to take 6,000 seconds. But no, you mentioned that the most of the places that we have signed up are true destinations. Actually, I shouldn't say most. All of them are true destinations. And I really kind of hope that's kind of what takes off here, is folks look at it not just as a poker tournament, but as a place to go and, you know, hole up for a week and really enjoy the resorts or the areas nearby and have a good time. Away from the table as much as they are at the table. And, you know, I can't speak enough about our first event. It's November 19th to December 3rd at Thunder Valley Casino Resort in Lincoln, California. It's just north of Sacramento. Mm-hmm. This will be the third time that I've been out there for it. I stayed at the resort last time. It's a AAA Four Diamond Resort. One of the most phenomenal places I've ever stayed in my life.
Breathtaking.
Breathtaking is what I put on there. But it is. It's absolutely an amazing place. I think people are really going to enjoy staying there. Eating there and certainly playing there, you know, we're going to get the event schedules done, but it's not officially released yet. But what we can tell you is there will be an Omaha 8 event and a horse event, plenty of no limit hold'em, of course, six mac, any up. I'm sorry, how do I say any up? Any only tournament.
I gotta tell everybody something. On the file, you wrote anti up, and I changed it to anti only to help you, and you still said anti up. It's just bred inside you, buddy. That's what it is.
It is. Well,
ingrained.
We're gonna have to get this thing changed because it's gonna be easier to get a change in everybody else's lexicon than in mine.
From now on, they're anti up only tournaments. How's that? I like that.
But there will be a 100,000K guarantee event that begins the day after Thanksgiving. They've been doing that for the last 4 years, I believe, there, and always get a capacity crowd for that. The main event will be $1,100. That's going to have a large guarantee as well, too. They're still figuring out how large right now.
Wow, here they are. They're calling us with the results. This is what the guarantee is going to be.
We're calling it right now. Oh, man. But both are expected to draw fields of more than 400 players that are going to be able to seat 200 each day plus alternates. And I guarantee you that there's going to be a long list of alternates for these events. So be sure you register early for them.
Plus a ton of satellites, too. They're going to have, what, 25 mega satellites? That's massive. That right there alone will guarantee the field's going to be huge. And they're going to be starting as early as November 9th with buy-ins as little as $60. So, I mean, if you live in that area and you know, easily can qualify for a seat there.
Yeah, and Ben Irwin, the great director of poker operations there, you know, he's very proud of this. He's like, you know, I don't really want my players and people that come in early to that don't think they can afford this main event to be able to afford it. So, you know, obviously you got a long way to go with the $60 satellite for $1,100 event, but you do have the ability to set satellite in for $60 and turn it into a really nice payday and all the other stuff too. So I'll actually be out there. I'm flying out Thanksgiving Day. I'll be out there Thanksgiving night. I'm going to be sticking through until very early on Tuesday, November 27th. I'm definitely going to be playing the horse event on Monday, November 26th. And I actually had to ask him how long he thought he was going to last so I could make my flight Tuesday morning. And if I win it, which, of course, you know, you go into it planning to, I will win it and have to immediately jump in the car to go to the airport.
Somebody, and here's something to bring up. Somebody asked me if I was going to play the main event of these things. And I said, not a chance. No. And not because I couldn't afford it or not because it's too expensive or anything of that nature, because it's not. It's because of what if I won? Yeah. And not that I have any illusions that I would win, but I'm not going to put myself on the cover of my own magazine. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. So, yeah, we're not going to play in the main event, but we might play in other events to have, you know, have some fun in our own.
Well, you know, I will say this, too. I'm going to ask at each stop what the poker director thinks of it, and that's exactly what I asked Ben. I'm like, you know, hey, Ben, you know, I would like to play, but you let me know if you think that's a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. If it is, I am perfectly fine not playing. And he said, absolutely not. It would be actually offensive. I think that's part of the allure of this is that people want to come out and and play with the Antioch personalities, and obviously you're buying with your own money, and I think that's the way it should go. And then I was like, you know what, we'll absolutely never ever play a main event because exactly what you said. But you know, if one of these other resorts said, you know what, hey, we're not comfortable you're playing, hey, we're not playing.
Sure,
we'll be there hanging out and greeting folks, and that's perfectly fine. So. Kind of let, again, just letting the managers dictate how this is run on their terms. I like that.
And that also the best part, too, is they have committed to running another one on our next season, probably November, December time, 2013. So it's nice to know that you have that one already in the can for next year as well. So we've got momentum for the next year already, so that's very good.
Our second stop, we really, really, really want to announce, but now obviously we're being responsible and waiting for the signed contract to get back, which we should be getting any minute now. At that point, we can announce the actual location. But what we can tell you is it will be January 21st to 27th. It will be at a AAA Four Diamond Resort in Las Vegas that has done several tournament series before. And their main event there will also be $1,100. And we'll certainly get more details, including being able to tell you which resort that is. Hopefully, we'll definitely buy the next show that we're on. Obviously, not for the Superfan show next week, but within 2 weeks. But you can always check out Annie up PokerTour.com and see if we can get it updated there.
Yet another website. We're just rolling with the websites.
Keeping GoDaddy in business.
All right, April 19th to the 21st, Running Aces Harness Park in Columbus, Minnesota, just north of Minneapolis. They're going to have an $1,100 main event there that will last 2 days. Or have two starting days, right? Two start days?
Yep.
Okay, and 1A, 1B. Both kicking off at 5 p.m., which helps with the work crowd, and that makes sense, you know. It will use the same player-friendly structure as it's used for its Midwest Poker Classic, which has plenty of starting chips, long levels, and a generous structure. Minneapolis, I think they have a lot of tournaments. Whenever we get there, they always get pretty nice crowds for these things because they're just tournament happy there. Whenever our columnist writes about them, it's always there's always some result in there from a tournament that's happening, and that's pretty much every month. So. We know Running Aces puts on a quality tournament program, and we're very very excited to be working with them. And they also agreed to hold an additional AUPT event in 2014 and 2015. So now we've got one scheduled for 2015, too.
Yeah, they'll simply be a staple on the calendar. And that's what we're kind of hoping. I mean, obviously, we want to be able to, you know, we're limiting this to 12 stops a year, so we'll be exclusive. But we do want to establish, you know, some of those people expect.
Yeah, they can count on
April,
it.
April, there's going to be an Antioch Poker Tour event at Running Aces. And, yep. You know, let each one build off of the last one. So that's very exciting. May 17th to 26th will be a Downstream Casino Resort in Quapaw, Oklahoma, which is just west of Joplin, Missouri, and north of Tulsa, Oklahoma. It'll be the fifth year of the Four States Poker Championship, and this year's event will have the added designation of being an Antioch Poker Tour stop. And manager Dale Hunter out there promises a variety of games that will make the Antioch Nation drool, including Raz, Stud, Omaha, and Horse. So certainly not heavy on No Limit Hold'em for that that event. And, of course, I've stayed there as well, too. Another tremendous, tremendous resort that people are going to enjoy hanging out with. You know, great pool area and great rooms and just a fun place. So, unfortunately, one of our cruises is right smack dab in the middle of that one.
Right.
So we won't be able to hang out for the full event like we wanted. And probably means I won't get to play one of the good events. But we'll be out there on one end of it or not. But definitely mark that on the calendar. That's a good reason. Good event that's been around for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very popular, and you know, Dale does a good job down there, so we're real excited about them taking over this event for us. And July 28th to August 3rd, the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Very exciting. This is going to be our Antioch Poker Tour World Championship. Essentially played in paradise, I would think.
Pretty close to it, yes.
You know, it's a luxurious, all-inclusive resort. Where your discount room rate will include gourmet dining at 9 restaurants, beverages including top shelf alcohol, land-based activities and shows, a split-level suite with a two-person jacuzzi and stocked bar, a resort credit good for golf and spa treatments, and much more. The room rate is $262 per night for two adults. Children rates are $42 per night, so it's a perfect opportunity for Antioch nationals who can't join us for a cruise because the kids are in school to join us for a cruise-like vacation during the summer. So, no more excuses. Kids aren't in school. Come on.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the best part of it. Obviously, we're appealing to two different crowds here. I mean, with the date, you know, right after the main event of the World Series, it's a good vacation for players that play the World Series or grinding pros that just kind of want to, you know, recharge but still keep their game sharp. But really the big thing is getting a lot of these recreational players down, getting the family on a great vacation that ends up going to be incredibly affordable for them when you factor everything that's included in this and how cheap the rates are for kids to share the room. And just come down and have a good time. And our good friend Sam Minatello is going to be the tournament director, and he designed the 14-event schedule and structure. And it's great for both those players. We're going to have nightly $125 events. So, you know, those recreational players will have something to play every night. And, of course, a three-day $1,100 main event. And then a bunch of daily events, including a Stud 8 Omaha 8 event, a No Limit Hold'em PLO event, an anti-only event, not anti-up. And, of course, they're requested with plenty of No Limit Hold'em events. And
lots of starting chips.
Sam's big on chips. He likes to give folks chips. So,
yep, you know, he does that in his own room, so he would do that with us, too. And, you know, think about this. You know, the kids will drink $42 in soda easily when you take them on vacation. That's incredible. And you went with $262 a night. I mean, that's including all of your food for the whole time you're there and you're drinking and stuff you want to do. I mean, it's just incredible. We're very fortunate to have this come our way to be part of an event and to make it affordable for our type of players. And it's very, very affordable, I think.
Yeah, certainly vacation destination. So, you know, put that on your calendar right now. And then you get back and then you dump the kids in school and they're going to have a great trip to tell all their kids about. And you're going to have lots of money because you won a big event. And so you're going to be able to make all the people at work envious, too. Yep. So you can't lose, right?
Yep. And we'll both be there and pretty much for most of it. And just just believe me, Sam runs a great tournament. Obviously, he ran the World Series all those times, helped run it, and he runs his own room very successfully, and just knows what he's doing. So, lots of chips, and lots of great events, and a lot of affordable things for you to do. Very good. And you know, we're going to announce the Las Vegas location as soon as possible, but we're also hopefully going to be announcing about 7 more stops too. Don't forget, you can always go to AntyUpPokerTour.com. to find out any more details as they get released, in case we get it midweek and don't get to announce it on the show.
Yeah, and having some really good conversations with rooms coast to coast on filling out those last 7 stops. So I think we're going to be able to fill the schedule out here relatively quickly. So,
yeah.
And hopefully have an event that's a pretty close drive or at least an easy flight for pretty much anybody wherever you live.
Elizabeth,
and you are listening to the Anti-F Poker Cast. Okay, we don't normally like to do this, Chris, because it's a little confusing, right?
Yeah.
People are driving right now, and we're going to tell them we're going to do a Chinese poker hand, and they're going to wreck their car because they're like, how can I keep track of this?
Or they're going to just turn the show off.
Well, that could be too.
Could be committing podcast suicide here, but.
But obviously our good friends at Smapsoft have been a part of the show for several months now, and you know, we're giving out a copy of their Chinese poker application every week. So I think more people are starting to play it either on that or just at home games. And one of our listeners, George Gibb, sent us in a Chinese poker hand, and we're going to call it a Chinese poker situation.
Okay.
Because it doesn't make much sense for us to list all 13 cards here and try to set the hand. He tells us how he set it, and he tells us some of the things that he considered in it, and I think that's a good discussion to have. Because, I played a lot on the plane, obviously, flying this past week, and, a lot of hands in Chinese set themselves, pretty much.
Yep.
Look at it, and, all right. I don't have any. I don't have any trips. So, but I got an ace high flush. I'll put that in the bottom. Doing the next best thing I can in the middle, and then hopefully have a pair on top or an ace high, and boom. And let's see how I did. But every once in a while, you run into a hand that you've got a lot of different ways to go with it, and that really, I think, is what separates the good Chinese poker players from the rest of us.
Yeah, full disclosure here. I read this hand already too. So I mean, we're not going to be setting it. We're just going to be talking about it and what you could do to maybe make it better or whatever. I love Chinese poker. I'm not very good at it, so people take money off of me a lot when we play, but it's a great way to kill time when you're on a plane or sitting around waiting for that final table to break when you're running the poker room or something. So I enjoy it a lot, and I do enjoy this Mapsoft program. I think it's pretty damn good. So
yeah, certainly if you have an Apple product, you're definitely going to want to download that, support our great sponsor. If you're like me and George, and we do not have Apple products, the next best thing is the Android app, which is just simply called Chinese Poker. And that's what he was playing this on. And he says he plays 2-4 with bonuses turned off. In fact, actually, I haven't even figured out how to turn bonuses on online. Maybe I need to update it.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to play with bonuses.
Yeah.
So he says the only way to score points is to win hands, preferably with a scoop. And that's true. It's almost like Chinese poker with bonuses is almost like no limit hold'em.
Yeah.
And Chinese poker without bonuses is like limit hold'em. You got to really grind it without the bonuses because you can only win a couple points per hand. Whereas you have the bonuses, you can just like totally wipe out your opponent. Take all the hotels on boardwalk from them. So here's the thing. He was dealt ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds, queen of hearts, queen of clubs, 10 of spades, 10 of diamonds, 10 of clubs, 8 of diamonds, 6 of clubs, and all 4 deuces. So he has 2 trips and quads in his hand. This doesn't happen over the day, kids.
Man, what a dream hand. Although I guess it's going to end up being a nightmare for him. But
yeah, we'll see.
So let's see. Before we move on, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 diamonds, right? Did you mention that already?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's correct.
So there's 5 diamonds. So you could make an ace high flush too with diamonds. no other suits, obviously, because you couldn't do that. But so there is a diamond flush also available to you to set this hand. So basically, you're looking at two sets of trips, quads, and within that, there is a diamond flush, nut diamond flush that you could set if you wanted to. So
yeah,
that's something to think about.
If you do the diamond flush, you could still do a boat as well, too.
Because yeah.
You get an embarrassment of riches, as
yeah.
I would call it.
Yeah.
Normally, to do a flush, you have to break up a boat, and that's sometimes that makes sense, and sometimes it doesn't. But we got a lot of ways we can go here. So, what George said is, in setting the hand, he instantly disregarded the flush on the bottom, and making an ace high flush in the middle would mean having only deuces full in back, since there's still a lot of high cards to make big full houses out there. So he put quads in the back. Now, again, for folks that joined us late on the Chinese poker, the way it works is you have to set three hands, two of them five cards, and the top one three cards, and the bottom hand or the back hand has to be the strongest hand, the middle hand has to be the second strongest, and then your three card hand on top has to be the weakest.
Right, and the three card hand on top isn't a poker hand, it's just three cards, so you, if you want to put three of a kind or a pair up there, that counts, but flushes and straights don't count up there, so...
Yeah. Trips, pairs, and high card.
Right.
All right, now he says the middle is not so simple. I like to have at least two pair in the middle, but my opponents have been coming out with three of a kind, straights, or even flushes lately. So I'm thinking, as long as I get the ace high on top, a full house is a monster in the middle. Also, full houses in the middle would be a bonus if I were playing with bonuses, so it must be the best way to play. So he ends up setting the hand as follows. Ace, 10, 8 on top.
Mm-hmm.
Queens full of 10s in the middle. And the deuces with a six kicker on the bottom. And he wants to say, do you see the mistakes? I might not have if one of the villains hadn't had the real monster.
Well, here's the thing. To me, this is a once in a very long while hand. A blue moon hand. That's because true. You almost never get to be able to set two hands that are bonus hands. And I guess we should also clarify what the bonus hands are. Usually a straight flush, quads on the bottom, and then a full house in the middle is a bonus, and then three of a kind on top is a bonus. So some sites or some programs or some players pay things differently too. Like I think Smapsoft, the top bonus doesn't pay as much as the middle bonus. It pays one less, but I'm not positive of that. I haven't played it in a little while. So there, that could be also something to take into consideration when you're setting this hand. If your friends pay it equally, then you could think about alternative ways to set it. Because if I knew I was going to make more to make a bonus in the middle than I would for a bonus on top, I might consider putting the bonus in the middle. But if I knew I would make the same amount on top and get away with it on the bottom, I mean the middle, I mean, then you know that's a different story. So you have to take that into consideration before you're worried about setting this wrong.
Absolutely.
So he said, do we see the mistakes? I assume he wants the top board to be stronger, and he's talking about...
Well, let's do this, because obviously he got it handed to him, because his opponent also had a monster once in a blue moon hand, and his board was trip trays on top, Broadway in the middle, and a nine high straight flush on the bottom. So we took the middle from him, but he beat us on the other two. And, of course, really, you know, playing bonuses would be different. But so we ended up from what we thought was, once in a blue moon, let's kill everybody hand. We only got 1 point out of it.
Right, so we lost a point,
yeah.
Basically.
Okay. We're playing other opponents, too. So.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Here's the problem I have with this. And when you're playing poker and you're playing hold'em and you flop a set, no matter how high it is or how small it is, if it's middle, bottom, or top set, you're getting it all in if somebody wants to get it all in with you. And it's because you say to yourself, what are the odds? Mm-hmm. And you play the odds and you think that my set has to be good here. Somebody probably has top pair, top kicker. There's no way they have an overset to me here. And then inevitably it does happen once in a blue moon. And so here, there's no way I'm thinking that I'm not going to win with the hand he set here. At least two of them, and two of them are both bonuses if they were playing bonuses. So there's just no way he's going to come away without a point. Now, he's thinking about scooping, but even ace 10-8 is a fairly strong top hand. So you can't think yourself here, you know, because if he reverses it now and puts what I'm assuming here is three tens on top, and then three queens in the middle, and still the quads. You know, it's still the same sort of scenario. You're still playing for guaranteeing yourself winning one board that's a bonus board, and almost giving up on the board in the middle. You know, so I don't know if you should really second guess yourself by setting it this way.
Well, I will say this. He pointed this out, and I think this is why I love this game, again, because of the subtlety of what you can do with these things. I mean, I think players, particularly beginning players, and George is not a beginning player, but, you know, you get those quads, you immediately say, oh my gosh, I got to put the quads in the bottom. Mm-hmm. How often do you get the quads? All right, well, the quads are going to squash almost everything unless you run into a straight flush here like you do. So you don't get any bonus points if you're not playing bonuses for how much you kill someone on one hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just need to beat them. You just need to pip them. So obviously the quads, you can feel fairly confident that you're at least going to win that last board. And usually what happens is when you get quads is you get crap everywhere else.
Right.
So you end up not wishing you had it because then you got to make some tough choices. But and then after that, though, it's actually being strategic with the rest of the cards. And I think what he admitted, and I admit is a mistake here, is that a boat in the middle is almost unbeatable. It's very rare that you get a boat in the middle.
Right.
So the fact that he went with a queens full of tens rather than tens full of queens is immaterial at that point. The tens full of queens is every bit the monster that the queens full of tens is. And if you would set it that way with 10, 10, 10, queen, queen. Wait, is that right?
Yeah, then you'd have ace, yeah, queen on top. Ace, queen,
exactly. And then you've got that kicker on top, which could make all the difference. It's much more likely you're going to lose with ace, 10, 8 versus ace, queen, 8 than it is losing with queens full of tens in the middle versus tens full of queens.
Right.
It's a very subtle difference, but it that's what you got to figure out, is when you're setting those hands, is what is the spread between what my hand is and what I can expect to encounter from my opponents, and let's try to make that spread as big as we can for all three of them. And, you know, if we need to dial down one that's a slam dunk winner to make another one of the hands a little stronger, then that's what you have to consider. And that's what was missing here, I think.
And he's, you know, you're right, because the bonus
wouldn't change anything.
And the bonus in the middle would still pay the same, whether it's tens full or queens full, because it's just a full house that gets paid the bonus if you're playing them. So that's true. He's talking about this hand with the knowledge of knowing he's got to face a straight flush and trips on top. And when you're playing the four, and he's playing this four-handed, by the way, he didn't just play this heads up. So he knew he was going to make a bunch of money against everybody else anyway, too. But he could have made more if he had said it, yeah, three tens on top, three queens in the middle, because he would have still ended up beating a lot of the other people with the middle board and top board and getting bonuses or whatever if he did it. But I don't think that way. That's results-oriented, and you can't be that way with this. The odds of you getting this hand are astronomical. The odds of somebody getting a hand better than this after you've gotten this hand are just absolutely ridiculous. So to think that you need to put three tens on top and put three queens in the middle because it's pretty good, yeah, you're getting a bonus on top, but you weren't playing bonuses. So I would think ace, queen, eight, and tens full of queens, or whatever he has now, is pretty damn strong. And if you're not playing bonuses, yeah, I know you're looking to scoop, but you can make a huge mistake by not winning that middle board now, too, by putting three queens on there, and the guy shows up a Broadway. So, you know, or three kings, or whatever it is he ends up getting. So I just think that the hand that he got was remarkable, and the hand that his opponent got was even more remarkable than that. And to have them at the exact same time, you can never foresee that. So the way he said it, I don't think there's a problem with it. Would I have made the alteration that you did? Probably, because you're only getting beat really by jacks full on the middle board if you go tens full. So, and what are the odds? So you're thinking of the odds again. So yeah,
I'll tell you what I would have done. And George and I had a good discussion back and forth, because George is insistent without bonuses that you need to scoop. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I don't necessarily agree. The way I go into it is I want to be sure that I'm going to win two out of the three.
Yep.
So a lot of times when I'm setting my hands, I purposely sacrifice one of the three, unless I can find a way where I think I can actually scoop. But generally speaking, I want to be sure that if I'm playing the hand and not surrendering, that I've got two locked up. If I can't lock up to, then I'm going to consider surrendering, which is a little tight, probably. But in this case, trips on top is going to win every time. Mm-hmm. Every time. Almost. Three queens in the middle is actually going to win more often than it loses. Mm-hmm. You know, occasionally you run into a flush or a straight there, but for the most part, it ends up being two pair hands, or even sometimes a pair with another pair on top. So I probably would have set the tens on top and the queens in the middle, and knowing that my quads are going to win on the bottom. So my quads are almost always going to win on the bottom. My trip tens are almost always going to win on the top, and that's two out of three. And then I think my queens have a fair shot of winning in the middle, so I have a shot of at scooping. But at least I know going in that I'm going to win two out of three. As it turns out, I would have only won one, just like he did, you know, differently. Mm-hmm. But again, that's a monster under the bed kind of situation. But I definitely want to win two, and I'm going to load the, you know. So a lot of times I end up sacrificing that middle. Because I know what can win on the top, I know what can win on the bottom. Is that middle is always the big no man's land every hand, I think.
The other thing too is I think he's making some references in this letter to the other hands, which really isn't fair because we're not talking about those hands.
Sure.
Because the way he said it and the way he thought about it afterward to said it still only nets him or loses him money. So it makes no with that one particular player that has the straight flush on the bottom. So. It's to me, it's semantics against this one hand, but in the overall grand scheme.
He did mention that the other two villains had Ace-Jack-X on top.
Right.
So he pipped them there. If he had a queen up there or trips there, then he would have got them because they had pairs in the middle. They did kind of what I did. They kind of sacrificed the middle. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I didn't want to...
No, that was my point. It was just, you know, okay, yeah, so he could have probably scooped... or whatever the other players...
Certainly going to scoop two other ones.
Yeah, yeah. So that's true if he had reset the tens full in the middle. And that's fine, but the problem is that he's coming up against this other hand that we're talking about, and that's... I don't think resetting it for that was what you should have been thinking. You should have just been thinking, let's put the strongest hand on top, and then deal with the middle after that. You're still putting tens full in the middle. That's great. So I agree with you. I think that... the best set is tens full of queens with ace queen eight on top, because of the people who are going to put an ace jack or even an ace queen six, you know, because there's a random card there at the end for the third kicker, so or second kicker. So I'm not too worried about the trips on top, the straight in the middle, and the straight flush on the bottom guy, because that's just never going to happen again to him. And you know, how many hands did it take for that to happen to him? You know, and then how many hands is it going to take for it to happen again? So just always think about setting the strongest possible where you're not hurting yourself by doing it.
Absolutely. All right, George, well, we appreciate you letting us talk about Chinese poker as much as we did. We're going to send you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com. And everybody else, send your hands of the week or questions or our mailbag to podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and you too might be a prize winner.
Tonight, I'm going to be on The Price is Right.
That's what I heard. Awesome.
Not the TV show one, the traveling tour one. They're coming locally. So I was thinking about this. I was thinking that, you know how they had the four contestants down at the bottom and they're doing all the bidding to get up on the stage? One of them should have the button. Because you know how they act last?
Yeah.
They should have a button. And then at that point, you have to have like a... there should be like a Price is Right guidebook written about how to play under the gun at Price is Right and how to play on the button and stuff. So, of course, it's a very finite audience. I don't know how people would buy it. But I'm going to bring a button with me, I think. And then if I ever get up there, I'm going to be like, I'm on the button, whoever the host is at the time. God, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Oh, I love it.
I thought about wearing an Annie Up shirt, you know, but I'm not going to be on TV. It's just going to be in Ruth Eckert Hall, so...
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so I'm going to wear something else, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'll wear a patch on my arm or something. All right, well, we're real happy about the Annie Up Poker Tour. Please check out AnnieUpPokerTour.com for the details. And that's about it. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. contact us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.